Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which, as we know from the 10 topics, concerns liberation. We're in the ninth chapter of the dynasty of Angshuman, and today's text is 44. Na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttamashlokad anyat kinchana vastu aham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham. Please chant. Adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham. Vaishnavis, ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham. Vaishnavis, na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokad anyat kinchana vastvaham. Anyone else? Na balye api matir mahyam adharme ramate kwachit na pashyam uttama shlokan anyat kinchana vastvaham. So everybody would pass the test. Whenever I traveled to Pralananda Maharaj, he always tests in the next class. He says, what was the first word of the verse yesterday? So you know, there's no way you're going to forget that, right? Na. Everybody can remember na. So if I ask you tomorrow, what was the first word of yesterday's verse? Na. Okay, na. Not. Balye. In childhood. Api. Indeed. Matihi. Attraction. Mahyam. Of me. Adharme. In irreligious principles. Ramate. Enjoys. Kochit. At any time. Na. Nor. Afashyam. I saw. Uttama shlokat. Then the personality of Godhead. Anyat. Anything else. Kinchana. Anything. Vastu. Substance. Aham. I. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. I was never attracted, even in my childhood, by insignificant things or irreligious principles. I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. I was never attracted, even in my childhood, by insignificant things or irreligious principles. I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Katwanga provides a typical example of a Krishna conscious person. A Krishna conscious person does not see anything to be important but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor does he accept anything within this material world as being unconnected to the Supreme Lord. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalilam, chapter 8, text 274, Stavara jangama deke na deke taramurti sarvatra hai nija ishta deva spurti, which translates as, the Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. End of that translation. Although a devotee is within the material world, he has no connection with it. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. He accepts this material world in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee may be engaged in earning money, but he uses that money for propagating the Krishna consciousness movement by constructing large temples and establishing worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Katwanga Maharaj, therefore, was not a materialist. A materialist is always attached to wife, children, home, property, and many other things for sense gratification. But, as stated above, Katwanga Maharaj was not attached to such things. Nor could he think of anything existing without the purpose of the Supreme Lord. Ishavasyamidang sarvam. Everything is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, this consciousness is not for the ordinary person. But if one takes to the path of devotional service as prescribed in the Nectar of Devotion, he can be trained in this consciousness and attain perfect understanding. For a Krishna conscious person, nothing is palatable without a relationship with Krishna. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadeshtarine. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnang Snapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sahadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchal Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there's an old joke in the entertainment industry. We're living right next to Hollywood here. It says that an actor is a person who doesn't mind if God is on the same marquee. You know, when you go to the theater, there's a marquee and, you know, the star is this person and the next star is that person. So he doesn't mind if God is on the marquee as long as he, the actor, his name is first. In other words, starring Bill Jones, and then after that you can say God or whoever else. So many people in this world, they practice religion in that mood, that I'm worshiping God, but it's still all about me. An easy way to find out, just have a conversation with them and see what they talk about. I did this, I'm planning to do that, I went there, I went here, my sister did that, my me, it's all about I, me, and mine. And maybe the God slips in once in a while. So, whereas when you meet a God-conscious person like Srila Prabhupada, as soon as you come through the door, Krishna, 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 Krishna consciousness, Krishna this, Krishna that. Very rarely did Prabhupada say anything about himself. Once in a while he would say something, in my childhood I did this and that, or my father said such and such. Every time you spoke to Prabhupada or you read his book, it's all Krishna, 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 Krishna. So that's how you can easily distinguish between a Krishna conscious person and a materialist. The materialist is always about I'm Shota Vyadini Rajanja, Nirangsha Shanti Sahasrasa. Shukadeva Goswami says in the beginning of the second canto that the materialists, they have sahasrasa, thousands and millions of topics to talk about. Art and music and poetry and literature and this and that. And they go on and on and on. And maybe once in a while again, God slips in. But it's all about, and all of those things are in relation to me. What I consider to be good art, that's important. If I don't like something, that's not important. You see? It's all about me, my taste and my travels and my and my and my and my. So we can test ourselves how far we've progressed in Krishna consciousness by listening to ourselves in conversation. What do we talk about? If it's all about I, me, and my plans, and I did this, and my past, and my future, not so far. Here we're hearing about a person who is really Krishna conscious, Katanga Maharaj. This is the description of samadhi, which is the perfection of yoga. The perfection of yoga is to come to this state of samadhi. We say samadhi, running the two words together, but it's actually two words, samadhi. D means intelligence or consciousness. So when the intelligence or consciousness is fixed on one point, that's samadhi. So the one point that we're supposed to be fixed on is Krishna. Again, not ourselves. Not ourselves. Many people, they practice yoga and they're happy to benefit from the beginning stages of yoga. You know, the asanas and the pranayama and all that. But it's meant to take us to the topmost rung, which is this point of samadhi, where the intelligence or consciousness is fixed on Krishna. So in the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, we're not obviously on that platform. So Prabhupada coined this term, working samadhi, where you work for Krishna. So you fix your mind on the work that you're doing for Krishna, whatever that work is. I remember when I joined in Henry Street, maybe they told you also Omkar, they said, when you're cutting Krishna's tomatoes, don't try to remember Krishna's pastimes. Concentrate on cutting the tomato so you don't put your blood in Krishna's subject. So this is working samadhi. Concentrate on whatever practical service the spiritual master has given you to do. And if we do that, then we will progress nicely and come to the point of remembering Krishna. And this is the goal of the whole Vedic culture, the whole yoga system. Smartavya satatam Vishnu vishmartavya najatachit. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Sarva vidina sedaktu. All of the rules and regulations of the yoga system, of the Vedic presentation, are subordinate to these two. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So some clever person may think, okay, well, I don't need any rules and regulations. I'll just walk around and always remember. It's not so easy. You can't cheat Krishna. You can't jump to that point artificially. The recommended process is bhakti yoga, which begins at the stage of vaidhi bhakti, where you're following rules and regulations and executing practical service under the guidance of the spiritual master. And then, gradually, one's consciousness will be elevated to this point. So what is the benefit? Why should I fix my mind on Krishna? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, that for one who sees me everywhere, just like Katanga Maharaj is doing now, For one who sees me everywhere and sees everyone in me, for him I'm never lost and he's never lost to me. So this is the benefit. This is the goal, and this is the what we gain. If we train, allow ourselves to be trained to come to this point of samadhi, then Krishna will never be lost to us. You can never, ever forget Krishna, even for a second. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, even in the most dangerous conditions, they tried, as you know the story, so many ways to kill him. He was completely fixed on Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, he was chanting. They could not shake him. To the point where, you know, Rani Kashyapu became so frustrated. Where are you getting the power from to defy me? Everybody else is afraid of me. And Prabhupada said in one class that when you're the greatest demon that ever lived, if your own 5-year-old son is not afraid of you, then nobody's going to take you seriously. So you had to solve that problem. You had to solve the Prahlad problem. Why you're not afraid of me? Everybody else is afraid of me. And Prahlad was not afraid because he was in samadhi. He was completely fixed on Krishna. So he could not be shaken. So this then is the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to bring all of us and everyone else that we can attract to this point of being fixed on Krishna. Because we know the final test will come. The moment of death will come. Narayani Mataji was speaking so nicely about how one God's sister passed away. And so that passing away is going to come for all of us. You know, we can't put it off indefinitely. By any means, we can. Some really, really advanced in the Ashtanga Yoga system, Prabhupada even said while he was here that some of these people who come to the Kumbh Mela, they're 300, 400 years old. You could be 4 million years old, and you're still going to die. You can't put it off indefinitely. You see? So, and even if you can transform the body, like we heard earlier in the past time of Shobhara Muni, when he came out of the lake in the Yamuna, he was all wrinkled and old looking, but by yogic power, he transformed himself into a gorgeous young man. You know, all these 50 sisters, they were fighting over him. But still, we heard in his past time that death came eventually. So we should take it seriously. Prabhupada has established this International Society for Krishna Consciousness to train every one of us to come to this point of samadhi, fixing the mind completely on Krishna, putting everything else aside. But it doesn't mean not seeing other manifestations. As it's explained, that the pure devotee, they see everything. Prabhupada was so sharp. He saw everything. There's that pastime, he was walking around the Krishna Balaram Mandir when it was just about completed. He was walking around when the devotees were, you know, just doing a japa walk around the temple. And Prabhupada stopped and said, "Why don't you see?" And everybody said, "See why?" They're looking around because they know Prabhupada. Everybody's looking high, low. Prabhupada said, "Why don't you see?" And they couldn't figure out where Prabhupada pointed. The sun was out, but there was a light bulb that was still on. That's how sharp Prabhupada was. He saw everything. But at the same time, he was seeing Krishna. Because he saw everything, as he says in this purport, in relationship with Krishna. So we're meant to see that also. We're meant to see the external energy in relation to Krishna, not in relation to my sense gratification. The materialistic viewpoint is, I'm born with nothing, and then for the rest of my life, I'm trying to acquire everything. Give me, give me, give me, give me. No matter how much I have, I want another one. I know, I'm still suffering from that. I have 3 cameras, and I'm still looking at the latest camera thinking, wait, maybe I should get that one too. To do what? The same picture-taking business. So it's the same thing in life. They've had 2 cars, 3 cars, but a new car comes out. Oh, I want that one. Thinking that will make me happy. But it never, ever works. We get it. Either we don't get it, we're simply fixed on it, hankering, how to save up enough money or steal enough money or get enough so I can get it. Recently in the news, there was some guy, you could say he didn't exactly steal, but he found a bag that had fallen off an armored truck or something. It had $60,000 in it. And the genius immediately went to a car dealer. $60,000 cash to buy a car. So, of course, they called the police. They could tell. This guy doesn't have $60,000. Where did he get it from? So they arrested him. So it's like that. We're so fixed and I want this, I want that. So beg, steal, or borrow, I have to get the money to get it. So you could say the materialists are also in samadhi, but they're fixed on the wrong thing, sense gratification. So we have to allow ourselves to be trained how to be fixed on Krishna. This is the whole process that we're undertaking here. So we can test ourselves also. What do I think of when there are usually 2 extremes in life. Something really, really good happens. And what do I think of when something really bad happens? Do I think of Krishna? easy test. And quite often we don't pass. I mean, I've told these two examples before, but once when I was traveling in Switzerland, came to Zurich and I gave a class there on this point about remembering Krishna at the time of death. And one brahmachari there approached me and he said, you know, Prabhu, I have to admit that not too long ago he was just recovering from, he had had a bad car accident. And he said, you know, when it happened, at that final moment when the impact, I didn't say Hare Krishna, I said something that I can't repeat. So imagine dying saying, oh, something that you can't repeat. You're going to take birth in a toilet somewhere. So it's very practical. We have to fix our minds on Krishna because the test will come. And then the other extreme is when something very nice happened. In many cases it happened. The parents die and left big money for the devotee who was ready chanting Hare Krishna. And instead of using it like Prabhupada says there in today's purport, money is meant for building big temples and other things to satisfy Krishna. No. I remember clearly one devotee in Henry Street, this was back in 73, early 74, I think. Father died and left him $600,000, which today doesn't seem like much, but $600,000 back in the 70s was a lot of money. So there went the bead bag, off came the neck beads, and he disappeared. And then about 10 years later, I saw him, and he confessed that he drove himself into deep misery with that money. So if we don't use it for Krishna, any material asset that we have, wealth, strength, fame, beauty, what to speak of money, it's all meant to be used in Krishna service. And if you don't use it, then it brings misery. If you don't use it in Krishna service. And we all have practical experience. If you don't use your physical strength, if you don't use your mental acumen, if you don't use anything that Krishna gives you, any ability that Krishna gives you, if you don't use it in the service, it's going to degrade you. The example is given of a wealthy man usually wears a very nice turban with jewels and stuff like that. So if he's on a boat and the boat capsizes, that same turban that he's so proud of is going to help him sink faster. That's the example that the Shukadeva Goswami uses in the Bhagavatam. So we shouldn't be like that. Don't let our assets drag us down and degrade us. Whatever assets we have, we should use to elevate ourselves by the process of Krishna consciousness. Now another interesting thing in this section here is that Katanga Maharaj, he's being celebrated, glorified. Why was he glorified? What did he just do? No, he fought on the behalf of the demigods. Fighting means he was killing people like anything. So here he's being glorified for killing people. Virya, warrior, going out and killing people. So that can be confusing. Why is somebody glorified for killing people? So Prabhupada used the example of a military man. When he goes to the war and fights, the more people he can kill, the more enemy he can kill, he'll be glorified when he comes home. But if he kills one person without authorization when he comes home, then he's thrown in jail. So he may say, wait a minute. He just gave me a medal for killing 10,000 people in battle, but now I kill one weird guy on the corner and you're going to throw me in jail. Yes, because it's unauthorized killing. So killing in this world always has to be authorized. If it's unauthorized, then the reaction comes. So he was fighting under the auspices of the demigods. So the demigods are above human beings. If a demigod tells you to do something, generally you should do it. They have authority over the human beings. So he was fighting on behalf of the demigods, and he was glorified. Whereas his ancestor, this King Kamashapad, Saudasha, he was a king, but because of the curse, he was going around and periodically killing people, and that was not glorified, not glorifiable. It was not authorized killing. But interestingly enough, we could say it's actually weird, even though he was going around and once in a while killing people and eating them, we don't hear that they kicked him out of office. Did anybody read anywhere that he had to stop being king? No, he was cursed for 12 years to act as a Rakshasa, and for those 12 years he remained king. Can you imagine if our current leader, Obama, or our city leader, you know, whatever his name, what's his name, the mayor? Garcia. Once in a while he would go out and kill somebody and eat them. Forget it. Get rid of that. Put him in jail. Kill him. Hang him. What is this nonsense? But we don't read that. The Vedic culture was so foreign to us. They didn't think like that. The king was going around and killing the citizens and eating them. Like that Brahmin. But they didn't kick him out of office. He stayed for 12 years. He remained king, and then the curse. Now, it's just to make it a little clearer, because the Bhagavatam doesn't give all the backstory to this. But in the Mahabharata, a few years back, Rinanda Maharaj was translating the Mahabharata, so I was working with him. So he translated Adiparva and the Sabhaparva, and then he stopped. But this story comes up in that section. So this King Kalmashapan, he was so pure that the curse was actually that he was going to be attacked by this Brahma Rakshasa, who would then make him act like a Rakshasa. It was a ghost. But he was so pure in his habits that the ghost was circling him for a long time and couldn't attack him because he was so pure in his habits. But one day, he went and he passed, you know, stool, and he didn't clean properly. This is just to point out how important it is to clean your body properly. Because on that one day he didn't clean properly, the ghost entered through his anus and took him over. So it became a battle. He was by nature a good person. So most of the time he was acting just like normal. But this Rakshasa ghost was so powerful that once in a while it would take him over. And that's when he would attack and kill somebody. You see? It wasn't just that he succumbed to his nature. No. Because then we could all use that excuse. Hey, we're born in Kali Yuga, we have mixed nature. So once in a while, if I give in to my nature and have a drink or smoke something or have illicit sex, you know, how can you get mad at me? No. It wasn't like that. He wasn't falling down. He was always strong, but once in a while, that ghost would take over completely. And at that point, he would attack somebody and kill them and eat them. So when the curse wore off, the ghost left, and then he was back to being his normal self. But we wouldn't be so forgiving, would we? Again, if our leader, one of our sannyasis, our temple president, he's normally a good guy, but once in a while he does this horrible thing. So, you know, no, get rid of him. Get rid of him. I've just found out through the grapevine that there's another Turli 2 case building against ISKCON, where some guru coolies who were not part of the first case, they want to now again sue ISKCON to get money. So it made me think about this whole principle of how the Vedic culture is so nice. That just like Jagai Madai we have here, you know, they were horrible guys. They committed rape and robbery and up to murder. But when Lord Chaitanya converted them to Vaishnavism, we don't hear that people were saying, hey, wait a minute, we should sue them, man. He killed my son. At least he should pay some money. You know, no. They became Vaishnavas and that was it. But in Kali Yuga, it's not like that. People are always after easy money. Now, that's not to say that nothing happened to them. I'm not saying that. You know, there were definitely cases of abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, verbal abuse. But there is a limit. There should be a limit to how much an abused person can, at what point does it end that they can stop, especially when a lot of the people who were in the society were not involved. Even back then when it happened, Prabhupada initiated more than 5,000 disciples. The vast majority of them were never involved in any case of abuse of any kind. But they're affected negatively by these kinds of lawsuits. What to speak of the society as it's constituted today? The vast majority of members of the International Society for Christian Consciousness had nothing to do with that. Some 24-year-old person wasn't even born when these abuses took place. So should they be negatively impacted forever by that? You see? It's food for thought. We have to think. At one point, does it end? Or does it go on forever and ever? 30 years from now, another person will say, well, you know, I never joined any of those two suits. Now I want money from you guys. At what point does it end? The Vedic culture is so forgiving. Even somebody like Kalmashapad, he was killing and eating people, but they never threw him out of office. They understood that this is a curse. If that was happening today, forget curse. I don't care. He killed somebody. Not only should he be punished, but the whole society should be sued. What kind of society are you? You're keeping a king like that in position? All of you should be sued. You all should pay me money. He killed my... It was a very deep story. I mean, I can tell you maybe some other time. But the point is, these people that are suing ISKCON constantly, would they have sued? Would they sue Prabhupada? Prabhupada was there when those abuses happened. If Prabhupada was there when that first suit was filed, would they have sued Prabhupada personally? Nowadays, they don't sue the persons that committed the abuse, many of whom are still alive. They don't sue them because they don't have any money. They sue ISKCON because that's where the money is. But again, ISKCON is constituted of majority of people who had nothing to do with that. They had nothing to do with the abuse. Even the ones that were around, like myself, when it happened, I had nothing to do with any of those things. I was shocked to hear about it later on. But to speak of, again, young people who have just joined the movement, why should they be subjected to hardship to pay money to somebody that for something that happened 30, 40 years ago? You see the point? So it's a very deep discussion. There's no easy answer. But we have to think about it. We can't just capitulate. Oh, yeah, you're right. You were abused. Okay, take $10 million. No. Why? Why? We have to think deeply about these things. Why? Why should somebody, Buck the Storm, just joined a year or so ago, why should he be subjected for the next 10 years to working hard to make money to pay somebody just because they think they owe, you know? Yeah, you need to move on. We need to move on. Vedic culture trains us how to move on because the goal of life is spiritual. It's not material. Have to move on. I mean, I regularly still meet people who are stuck 30 years ago in an ashram somewhere. Somebody abused me or verbally said something mean to me and I just can't forget it. So I always ask them, have you made any progress in the last 30 years? Now, don't you think that that same person that yelled at you 30 years ago, that they made some progress also? So why are you stuck 30 years ago remembering that when you lived in the Brahmacharya ashram, so-and-so leader yelled at you? My God, please. Let go. So Vedic culture trains us how to absorb the mind in Krishna, because that's the only way you're going to let go. If you remain with you as the center, then you'll always remember everything. Your parents did something to you. Your cousin did something to you. The ashram leader did something to you. You'll never forget. The only way to forget is to absorb the mind in Krishna. So we'll stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, Bhrigupatipu. So why don't you just speak, say it, sir? A little louder. Raise the volume on the wireless. Okay, go ahead.
In the hands, in Krishna's hands, and so easily and happily return to Godhead. And in the next purport, Prabhupada says, the pure devotee in Krishna consciousness, there's no fear of returning, whether he leaves the body at an auspicious or inauspicious moment by accident or arrangement. So why bother? I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're covered, just like Bhakti Tirthamaraj. He didn't bother to go to Vrindavan or anything like that. He just stayed here in the United States and left his body. So why is that tendency to go to Vrindavan or Mayapur to leave the body?
There's no harm, either way. The Prabhupada has established these Vaikuntha outposts. So if you leave your body in New Dwarka like Jayananda did, it's not any less than if he had left in Vrindavan. New Dwarka is dumb. Anybody who hasn't realized that yet, you know, I'm sorry, you know. Come and talk to Rukmini Dwarkadish. They'll convince you. This is dumb. And so if you think you're living on Watsika and Venice, then you have to run to Mayapur or Vrindavan. But then, on the other hand, there's no harm. If you have a preference of leaving your body in Mayapur or Vrindavan, there's no harm. But don't think that if you leave your body on Watsika Avenue, that there's anything less. This is dumb. New Dwarka Dham. We don't just say that whimsically. It is dumb because Rukmini Dwarkadish is just standing here. So, and I remember I was in Mayapur when somebody gave a presentation and they were saying that in some obscure scripture it says that anybody who dies within a certain radius, let's say, I think it was like 20 kilometers of an established installed deity, they go back to Godhead. even if they're not a devotee, if they leave their body, that means every cockroach that's leaving their body on Watsika Avenue, they're going back to God. Some obscure shastra. I don't know the shastra where they found that quote, but there was some quote that anybody who dies within a certain radius, circumference, of an established worship deity, they go back to Godhead just by leaving their body in that proximity to the deity. So there's that. Anything else? Yes, Bhakta Star.
Thank you so much for a very nice class. So I was just wondering, just about the last thing you said, then why try? Why try, you know?
Why try what?
Why can't we just be homeless and just kind of hang out around the temple?
Why not have regular meals instead of leaving it up to chance? Right? Just like here, we have breakfast at 8:30 and lunch is served at 1:30. So you live in the ashram, there's no anxiety. Because if you leave it up to chance, outside, you know, you can't cheat Krishna, in other words. You may think, okay, I'll just stay close to the deities and some or other, I won't practice properly, but I'll die close to them. It may or may not happen. The case that I remember is there was this one individual who was living in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, but he was not, let's say, practicing Krishna consciousness to the highest standard. And then when he was about to leave his body, instead of being allowed to die there in Vrindavan, he was put in the car and they were driving him to a hospital in Delhi. So he died along the way. You can't cheat Krishna. If Krishna doesn't want you or think that you're qualified to go back to Godhead, he'll make an arrangement that you'll stay here every single day up to the last moment, and then somebody will take you down to Venice Beach, which is too far. Something like that. You can't cheat. So the point is, follow the recommended process, which is practice Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada said in the purport today, following the instructions of the nectar of devotion, and then you're safe. Why try to come up with some other calculation? Yes. Nagapatni Mataji.
Thank you. Thank you for a nice class. And in regards to that question, why try? Because as we purify our hearts and develop our devotion, we'll become happier and more blissful, and we'll be living in the spiritual sky.
Jai. Rantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.
Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai.
Haribol.